We left off in the middle of Kashrus. I try to run through a little more of Kashrus. The Gemara says that one of the Amoraim says that he doesn't compare to his father. His father was a bigger tzaddik than he is. His father, when he would have meat, would wait 24 hours to have milchiks, and he's not on that level. He only waits from one meal to the other. And the Rambam quotes this, that it's kemoshe shos, approximately 6 hours. So in Shulchan Aruch, it's assumed that this is a minig, it's not a din. Just like what the father did, the father waited 24 hours, that's not a din. It's even waiting from one meal to the other, which we usually assume is kemoshe shos, approximately 6 hours, is only a minig. To wait 1 hour between fleshiks and melchiks could possibly be a real din midirabban. It's not a din in Atar. In Atar, it's only prohibited to eat basa becholab that were cooked together. Even if they're not cooked together, in Atar, you can eat the cheese and meat at the same time. So the Chasam Sofer's Tshuva is quoted by the Pischi Tshuva on the bottom of the page in the Yerideya, that years ago people had ulcers, so they would be in pain. So the way they would relieve the pain would be by milk. So if a person has an ulcer attack and he's fleishig, he's not a cholo shem b'sakana. Cholo shem b'sakana means a person has a condition that prevents him from functioning normally. He has aches and pains. So the Chasam Sofer says that since waiting 6 hours is only a minhog, so even a ktsas chole, a bori with a mechesh bi'alma, would be permitted to violate the minhog. He wouldn't have to wait 6 hours. But the Kapachayim comments, but to wait 1 hour could be that that's a real din midirabbon. What's the mokar for that? There's no mokar in the Gemara. The mokar is the Zohar. The Vilna Gaon quotes, Bir Agro quotes in Siman Pei Tes from the Zohar. It's quoted by the Bis Yosef. Most of the quotations that the Vilna Gaon gives are not the original Maamar Kaimis. Most of them is just quoting from what the Beis Yosef says. The Beis Yosef quotes the Zohar, that one is not permitted to have meat and milk, b'shaita chodo. So that's the question, does it really within 1 hour? 60 minutes, shaita chodo means 1 hour. Or means b'vas achas, means you shouldn't have meat and milk together. So the Kafachayim and others assume that 1 hour is a real dima de rabbon. So to be permitted to have milchiks within the first hour after having fleishiks, since it's a real dima de rabbanon, the only time we would be makel would be if the fellow is really a cholo shem b'sakana. If he really is so sick that he can't function normally, so then on Hilchos Shabbos, if a person is a cholo shem b'sakana, we allow one to violate all of the gzeiros de rabbanon. To violate a malacha de rabbanon, you have to be have at least a sakana saver. Or worse, but to violate a gzeri de rabbanon, so if one is a chel shem b'sakana, we would be mekel on all of the gzeris. So that's the same over here. To waiting 1 hour is not that it's basa b'cholam de rabbanon; it's a gzera. Shema he'll eat meat and milk that were cooked together. So to eat within 1 hour, you have to be a chel shem b'sakana. To eat within after the hour is up, to eat within the 6 hours. So that even a bari with a mechesh b'yalma, the Chasam Sofer is mekel on that.
So if it's just a minhag, are there any ramifications for children?
Do you
need to make kids wait 6 hours?
When a child is higir l'chinuch, so then you have to train him on all of the dinim. Katan shalo higir l'chinuch, so the Gemara has a din, the first pasuk in Parshas Emor, Emor v'amarta l'hazik d'olam alaktane. So the Gemara says in the end of Yevamos, the beginning of Perek Cheresh, the first daf in Perek Cheresh, that a cotton, even a little infant who doesn't understand anything about anything, also l'achila bi'adam, you have to have kosher baby food. You can't give the child a real iser. So there's a machlokes, the Shulchan Aruch and the Hilchos Shabbos, Shin Mem Gimel quotes a machlokes between the Rambam and the Rashbo, whether this iser l'achila bi'adayim only applies to Yisurim d'araisa or even to Yisurim d'rabban. So we're machlokes that also l'achila bi'adayim even applies to an iser d'rabbanan. But Amin Hogim, Chacham Avadya has a tshuva, writes Amin Hogim, there is no Issa L'Achila B'Yadayim. So let's say Chacham Avadya writes those Ashkenazim who have a meaning not to eat kidneys. But if you have a young child who doesn't even understand what Pesach is all about, you explain to him, he's a Katan Shalohi Gilachinuch, he won't understand what kidneys is all about. So he says it's permissible to give him kidneys. The Issa L'Achila, when he'll become Higir L'Chinuch, so the Gemara seems to say that there is a Chinuch even Amin Hogim. The Gemara says in Perek HaNizok, in the middle of Gittin, that when a child is a yosem and the apotropos is in charge of raising the child, he has to see to it that the apotropos is permitted to spend money of the yosemim, to buy a lulav, And then the Gemara says also to buy arabas for chibat arava anoshana rab. Arabas anoshana rab is only a minig thing. Still, you see from the Gemara that there's a din of chinach aminogim as well. So that's when the child will be higir lechinach. But when he's lo higir lechinach, just an isa also lachilu biadayim. So on isurim de rabbanon, that's a machloikas. On minhagim, that's already mutter. That would be mutter lechaladeis. Yeah. We mentioned the din is that one is not permitted to eat kosher food in a non-kosher kli, because if you'll cook it in the kli, so then it'll give a bliya, and the din is a tam kiker. The tam of the treifas that's balu on the pot will go into the kosher food, and it'll make a treif. What if the kli is ein ben yomo? So that's the gzera de rabbanim. In atar kli shein ben yomo, the bliya that it's going to give into the kosher food is going to be nice in tam of gam. And the Rabbanon made a gzera in a ben yom to ben yom. So we spoke about that already. So in the Shulchan Aruch it says, what if you're going to eat food on a treifa plate? Tzainan, everything is going to be cold. It's not going to be hot. So strictly speaking, it should be mutter. But we don't recommend it because we assume that there's a gzera de Rabbanon, even though it's not really in the Gemara anyway. We assume there's a gzera de Rabbanon that if the person will get used to eating, let's say, he'll use a fleishig soup bowl to eat his Cheerios in the morning with milk. What's wrong? The milk is cold. Everything is cold. What's wrong? So if he'll do that, then he'll forget, and then may pour in hot milk. He may pour hot milk into the fleishig soup bowl and make a treif. If you allow a person to eat something b'tzainan, so he may forget and start using the treif kli b'chamen. So in the Shulchan Aruch it says, if a person is b'beis shel nochri, he's eating bebesu shal nochri beikroi only on a rare occasion. If he's going to go into the next door neighbor's home every morning and eat his Cheerios in a treifa bowl, the goyim have the same soup bowl for the fleshing and for the milchik. So he's going to have a treifa soup bowl. It has a bli of chazer in it. So I'm going to have my Cheerios in the soup bowl every morning. That's kavua, so that's not permissible. But beikroi bealma, it's permissible to eat kosher food that's tzoinen in a treifikli. What's the definition of bikroi b'yama? So it doesn't say in Shulchan Aruch. So it doesn't say in Yerideya. So in Hilchas Kriya Shema, totally unrelated in Hilchas Kriya Shema, the Shulchan Aruch quotes the sheet of the Rif that who learns the Gemara in the first parak in Brochas around Daf Tessa, so that if you have a Shas Hatchak, we would permit the following bikroi b'yama on a rare occasion, that the fellow will recite Kriya Shema. He didn't daven Ma'ariv yet, so he's going to daven Ma'ariv right before Alos HaShachar, and Shachar is right after Alos HaShachar. He'll say Kriya Shema Shal Arvis 20 minutes before Alos HaShachar, and Kriya Shema Shal Shachar is 5 minutes after Alos HaShachar. And then on another occasion, he'll recite, he still didn't daven Ma'ariv, it's already after Alos HaShachar. It's already after Alos HaShachar. So he can't say Hashkivenu, but the B'shas Atchak, he didn't have married yet, so we would permit him to daven Kriya Shema with the brachas, leaving out Hashkivena after Alos HaShachar, before Haneitzach Hamo, and then to say Kriya Shema Shol Shachris after Haneitzach Hamo. He shouldn't do a Tarte de Sasa, he shouldn't say the both Kriya Shema Shol Arvis and Kriya Shema Shol Shachris in between Alos HaShachar and Haneitzach Hamo. Either it's Yom or it's Lai, it can't be both. But you can do one without the other, as long as you don't have a tie to this asra. You're only permitted to do this b'ikroi b'alma. So there, the Mishnah Berurah quotes Tachrinim who say just what's the definition b'ikroi b'alma. They say b'ikroi b'alma means once a month. So let's say.
Is it for the Yom too now? Somebody had a problem with the Yom, forgot to say the Yom.
Yeah.
Self sphere, and he wakes up and it's Yefta Alos Shachar. He would be able to do such a thing also.
To count with a bracha?
Yeah.
No. Kriya Shema is different because it depends on Zman Shchiva and Zman Kima. It doesn't really depend on Yom HaLayla. So that's why we can negotiate a little bit. But Sfira Zaymer, according to the Rishonim Hod, you can only count by Layla. Some Rishonim Hod, you can count by Yom with a bracha. But those Hod, you cannot count by Yom with a bracha. It's because of a din of Layla versus Yom. So Layla is over at Alos HaShachar.
So
Kriya Shema is different.
Yeah,
Alos HaShachar. So over there, the Mishnah Berurah quotes that Bikroi B'Yama means once a month. Okay. What does it mean once a month? Let's say I'm going to always have breakfast in a treif restaurant. They're going to give me Cheerios with milk. And all the bowls are treif. They serve chaza. So they have so many bowls there. Mistama, I'm only going to have this bowl once a month. stamina every day, I'm probably going to have a different bowl. I don't think that's permissible. But if I have 30 different trefir restaurants, and I'll have breakfast one day, cold milk and Cheerios in this restaurant one morning, and then cold spoon and cold Cheerios and cold milk and cold trefir bowl in this restaurant, every restaurant I'll eat in once a month. So mistama, that would be muta, be kray be alma, be basil shal nachrim, to have kosher food in a trefir kli would be muta. Yeah. What's the din?
Would there be maris ha'ayin if one has relatives who are eating in a non-kosher restaurant and one went there to have like cereal for breakfast or something? Is that a problem with maris ha'ayin if you're going to the...
There would be an issue of maris ha'ayin, yes, there would be. There are two issues of maris ha'ayin. When you learn the Gemara, there's one maris ha'ayin. Let's say the restaurant has a hashgacha that's not reliable, and I'm going to go have a Pepsi. I'm not going to eat any meat there. So that's a maris ha'ayin of sort of living. People are going to see me go into the restaurant. They're going to think that everything is kosher. That's one kind of maris ha'ayin. What if it's a restaurant where they know there's chaza there? It's not. They're not going to think that it's kosher. Not that it has a weaker, questionable hashgacha. It's absolutely treif. So then there's a different issue of a maris ha'ayin, that people will think poorly of me, that I am not the balabas over my reputation, that I should have the right to ruin my reputation. You're not allowed to do something that will cause people to think that you are violating one of the laws in the Torah. That's like Lashon Hara on yourself. You know, just like you're not allowed to talk Lashon Hara on someone else to ruin their reputation, one is not permitted to ruin his own reputation. So that depends. In New York, I think by now everybody knows that a lot of religious Jews take business clients or associated take business people to trade for a restaurant, and the Jew has a Coca-Cola, he has an orange. In New York, a lot of people know. So out of town, a lot of times they don't know yet. So that depends. In each instance, is there maris ha'ayin or not? The Gemara singles out specific activities that the Tanoim prohibited mishum maris ha'ayin. So whatever they singled out, whatever the Tanoim made exeron, like they said, a person was walking in the street on Shabbos and it's pouring and he got all wet. So he wants to hang up his suit in the sun on the clothesline that it should dry off. So the Gemara says it's a maris ha'ayin. People will think that you washed your clothes on Shabbos. If it's a suit, probably there's no exact, because nobody washes a suit, they send it to the dry cleaner. But let's say underwear, you're going to hang up underwear, hang up towels, so people will think that you washed it on Shabbos. So the Gemara says there's a machlegi satana, and we paskin. In general, the consensus is that we paskin, even if the chashash marasain doesn't apply, it's still us, because the chachamim singled it out specifically. They said you're not allowed to hang up wet clothes on the clothesline. So that whatever they singled out, so that's also even b'chadri chadorma, no one is watching. But if it's like eating in a non-kosher restaurant, the Tanoim never spoke about that. So there is a minority opinion that whenever anything would be marisayin and people would be watching, then even if no one is watching, it's also prohibited. The Pischei Tshuva quotes that. But the Pashtus is like the other poskim, that whatever the Chachamim didn't prohibit Mishum, then there's another extreme opinion. Whatever the Chachamim didn't prohibit Mishum marisayin is mutter, even though there is a Chashasha marisayin. So the two extremes are, we usually accept the centrist orthodoxy, the middle shita. So the middle sheet is whatever the Tanaim asked Mishum Marisayin is also afir b'chadru chadarm. Whatever they didn't single out, the Gemara doesn't mention that they asked going into a non-kosher restaurant. But so if there is a Marisayin, then it's us. And if there is no Marisayin, if no one is watching, then it would be muta. If everybody knows that religious Jews go into a trefir restaurant to use the telephone or to use the men's room, so then there's no Marisayin.
Yeah.
What's the story with bugs? So the Chumash says that bugs are also, no question about it. A lot of times on vegetables, the vegetables are going to be clean. The likelihood is that you're not going to eat a bug unless you eat 10 portions. But a normal person eats one portion, so if the likelihood is, the odds are that he's not going to be eating a bug. So really, menatari should be mutter. You go bus a roiv. The roiv is that there isn't going to be a bug. So we have a chumre in Shulchan Aruch, a din midirabanan, that if there's a miyut hamatzui, if there's a significant percentage of a miyut that by eating the portion that you're going to eat, you will be eating a bug, so then there's a din midirabanan, and you have to check the vegetable in advance. Where is the source of this din that when you have a miyut hamatzui, there's a chayvus bedika? So that's the first melchames on chulin. The Ramban on the bottom of the rif has melchames Hashem, where he disagrees with the Baal Amor. So he quotes from the Medrash that observance of mitzvahs is supposed to teach us to discipline ourselves, supposed to observe the mitzvahs. And a side effect, well, that's not the purpose of the mitzvah, is to develop discipline, but that's a side effect. And when a person gets used to observing mitzvahs, he will develop a discipline. So the Medrash says we should really dig up Adam HaRishon. Mi yigalu afa me'enecha Adam HaRishon. Adam HaRishon is dead and buried. And we should really dig him up and take out the sand on his eyes. He should open up his eyes and take a look. He couldn't wait. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him he's not allowed to eat from the Eitz HaDaas. So according to the Medrash, the same day that he was created, he was commanded not to eat from the Eitz HaDaas, and he ate from the Eitz HaDaas the same day. He couldn't even wait. He couldn't even hold himself down one day. And the Ramban quotes a Medrash that if he was created on Friday, he would have waited till El Shabbos, it would have been mutter to eat from the Eitz HaDaas. That's a Chiddush. It would have been mutter to eat from the Eitz HaDaas. So he didn't even have patience, he didn't have self-restraint to wait till El Shabbos. We should dig him up and show him the Jewish people. We plant a tree and we don't eat the fruits that grow the first 3 years. In the fourth year we bring it to Yerushalayim. We don't eat it chutz Yerushalayim, net the Revai. And we shecht an animal, the Medrash says, and we don't eat the animal until we check the lungs to see if there are any sirchas. So the Ramban points out, the Medrash only worried about checking sirchas on the lungs. There are 70 kinds of trefas. So why are we only checking? So it doesn't have a broken leg. So you see, it doesn't have a broken leg. But why not other things? Why don't you check all the kishkas? Why don't you check all the inside organs? On the outside, looks like a healthy animal. Why don't you check all the other 69 trefas? Ramban says the answer is because sirchas on the lungs are miyotam motzi. So that's the halacha. You have to be choshish mid the rabbanon. For miyotam motzi, you have to be budding. The same thing, let's say, shatnas. You buy a suit. How often does it happen that it's going to have shatnas? The odds are it's not going to have shatnas. Most of the time, it doesn't have shatnas. But because there's if there is a miyotam motzi, you have to ask the shatnas man, what percentage likelihood is there that there's going to be shatnas? So sometimes a certain brand, a certain make, we know it's shatnas. We know never has shatnas. Never has shatnas, so you don't have to be bodik. If it's a miyotam motzi, then you have to be bodik. So what's the definition of a miyotam motzi? So the Mishkan is Yankif was a Talmud of Rab Chaim Volozhiner. He learned in Volozhiner Yeshiva. Rab Ankela Karlina writes in his Truas, he thinks he has a right from the Gemara. He thinks that a miyotam motzi means 10%. If there's a 10% likelihood that you're going to be eating a bug, or that more than 10% of all of the animals that they shecht have a sirchas on the lungs, and make them trefas. Rav Soloveitchik said when he used to supervise, he used to give a hashgacha in the slaughterhouse in Boston, he said at that time there was 14% of all of the animals that they shechted that had the sirchas on the lungs that made them trefas. So he said that corresponds to this Mishkan and Zayankah. It was 10% or above, is a miyotam motzi. So then you have to be bodik mid the rabbanim. In every country they keep records, every community where they shecht they keep records. In Eretz Yisrael the percentage of sirchas is much lower. In Eretz Yisrael, it's only around 7%, not 14%. So Rabbi Yashiv said as a chumrah that you see that the Medrash that the Ramban quotes is probably written in Eretz Yisrael. So the Medrash says that you have to be boidik for sirchas on the lungs because it's a miyotam motzi. The other 69 trefas is a miyotam motzi. So in Eretz Yisrael, it's only 7%. So you see that 7% is considered a miyotam motzi. That was his chumrah. Rav Neuwirth, Zechayin Lebrach, the one who wrote the Shmur Shabbos Kol Chasa, mentioned to us once that he used to go to Argentina to supervise the shechita of the meat that was brought to Eretz Yisrael. Years ago they didn't have shechita, I don't know if they have now, they didn't have shechita in Eretz Yisrael, so he used to import from America and from Argentina. They said in Argentina the air is better and there's only 5% of the animals have sirchas. So the question is, so shekama chumra now, if you're eating a vegetable, and there's a certain portion, and there's a 5%, or you're drinking water, let's say, in New York City, what percentage likelihood is there that you're going to be swallowing a bug when you drink the water? Suck. So should you say, because in Argentina, the sirchas are 5%, so the Medrash says you have to be voting for sirchas? So he said he doesn't think one mechiv to be machmer more than what Rabbi Yashin said. Yashin said that in Eretz Yisrael is 7%. So it must be, if it's a 7% likelihood, that it's going to be trefus, a 7% likelihood that this vegetable is going to have a bug in it, depending on how big the portion is that you're going to eat. Let's say in New York City, if you drink water, so what likelihood is there that there's going to be a bug? So if you're going to drink a whole quart of water, so then there's a higher likelihood that you're going to be swallowing. Well, only drinking one cup of water, so there's a much smaller chance. One cup of water is probably less than 10%. It's probably between 7% and 10%. whether one cup of water in Washington Heights will have a bug in it or not. So vegetables, it depends how many vegetables you plan to eat in one sitting. So that's the klal about the bugs. There is a klal in the...
Did Rav Niver check for the sirchus? If it was only 5% chance that it had a sirchus, was it a matzoik? Was it considered?
They kept records. No, the slaughterhouse does check. They always check for sirchus, and they kept records. And they're not sure. It was only 5%, but they always used to check.
They checked anyway.
Yes, and the Ikar Adin, he said he doesn't think you have to check. It's less than 7%. There's no halacha l'moshe. That's Rav Soloveitchik. He used to say l'chumer. There's no halacha l'moshe m'sinat that you only check for the sirchus and not for the others. If the sirchus would be less than 10%, according to Rabbi Yashav, less than 7%, then you're not mechuyav to check for the sirchus. Then Rav Soloveitchik said l'chumer. He said in the spring time. In America, the young calves don't have enough seichel, so when they graze, they don't have seichel, so they peck away, they nibble away on the nails on the fence around the corral, and the nails go in the system, and they make holes in the kishkas. So he said he came to the realization that that's a miyutam matzah. So he said, in America, you have to be baidik. If you shecht young calves in the spring season, you have to be baidik for a nekev in the intestines, because that became a miyutam matzah. And Eretz Yisrael also was a problem. So that's why they have a patent. They put a, what do you call it? They put a magnet in the stomach of the animal, so when the nails go down, they're stuck onto the magnet and doesn't continue to go into the intestines. They showed me, I once visited Kibbutz Chafetz Chaim many years ago, so they showed me the magnet, the clean magnet, and then they showed the magnet that they took out of the stomach of an animal that they shechted. It looked awful, and awful of nails, and it picked up all the nails and prevented it from going further. Okay. Yeah. It's usually assumed that a bug that you cannot see, not visible to the naked eye, is not awesome. The Torah only prohibits bugs that you can see. This does mean that if you close your eyes and you eat the soup, that whatever you don't see, that's what some misunderstood. Whatever you don't see doesn't hurt you. That's not correct. The Poskim discuss in a certain community, that's what the Maramshik writes, that every body of water has these copepods, that the whole issue here in New York is. He says, all over the world, every body of water has copepods. The only issue is it a mir tamotze in your community, or is it a mir chena motze? If it's a mir tamotze, then you have to filter the water. If it's a mir chena motze, then you're not mechuyev to filter the water. So some of the poskim say, when these copepods are alive, here in New York, the water is... forced in the pipes with such a pressure, so all these copepods, by the time the water reaches our kitchen, all the copepods are dead already. So they're not swimming around. But if you would take a bucket of water from the reservoir and bring it over here, that's what someone did, it looks like a fish tank with fish swimming around. You can't see the copepods, but you can see them swishing around, and it's clear that it's not the wind that's blowing. It's clear that there's something there swimming around. So let's say you cook the water, and now they're all dead. And now nothing is swimming around, so now it's not visible. But I was able to see it before they cooked it. So the Darkei Tshuva on Yeridea quotes the Acharonim and say, that's not called not visible to the naked eye. You know that if you wouldn't have cooked the water, it would have been visible, you would see it swimming around. So even though now you cooked the water, now they're all dead, that's called Nirelainai. But the same thing over here. If I would take a bucket of water from the reservoir, it would be Nirelainai. I would see them swimming around. Rabbi Taisus and Erehim write. Why is it called Sheretz? Because Sherutz, when it runs, then it's visible. When it stands still, it's translucent. So you can't even notice this copepod. You don't realize that it's there, but when it starts fish swimming around, then you can notice it. So that's called the Sheretz, because when it runs, it is visible. So even though by the time the water reaches our kitchen, all the copepods are dead already, because they get killed by the pressure, by banging against the pipes. But in the reservoir, it would have been visible. So that's what the Darkei Tshuva says. And that is called Nirelain. What else do you have to know about kosher animals? How do you determine whether any given animal is kosher or non-kosher? So the Chumash says, if it's malagera mafris parso, then it's kosher. We have to know what's a behemah, what's a chaya. Chaylev is only osur in a behemah. In a chaya, chaylev is mutum. How does one determine whether any given animal is a behemoth or a chayah? So the Gemara says, depends on the shapes of the horns. The Shach says that's a little complicated to figure out the shape of the horns. So the minig is we only eat chelav of a deer. You don't have to cut out the chelav of a deer. We know that a deer is a chaya, it's not a behemah. But if it's any other animal, and we're not sure whether it's a behemah or a chaya, and we're going to rely based on our judgment of the shape of the horns, so that's a little tricky. So the Shach writes, a minig in Vilna, Shach lived in Vilna until Lechem Elnitzki writes when he had to run away. So he writes that the minig is that they don't eat chelav of any animal unless you have a tradition, unless you have a masorah, that this is a chaya. The Chochmas Sodom was a businessman. Chochmas Sodom was lived the time of the Vilna Goin. He said a hesped when the Vilna Goin passed away. He was a mechutin of the Vilna Goin's child, a son. He refers to the Vilna Goin as his mechutin, not exactly. He was mechutin of the son of the Vilna Goin. So the Chochmas Sodom quotes this Shach, and he says the meaning of Vilna is that you don't eat any animal. You don't shecht an animal that you don't have a masorah on it, that it's kosher. That's not exactly what it says in the Shach. The Shach says you don't eat the chelav of an animal, assuming that it's a chaya as opposed to a behema, because it's tricky to determine based on the shape of the horns whether it's a behema or a chaya. It doesn't really say that in the Shach, but that's what the Chochmas Adam writes. And the Chochmas Adam was always accepting Lithuania like the Bible. He always followed the Chayodim and the Chochmas Adam. Everybody followed it. So that was the big issue with the Zibu in Eretz Yisrael. Years ago, when the chief rabbi was Rabbi Herzog, the first chief rabbi was Rabbi Cook. He passed away in 1935, and then after him was Rabbi Herzog, and after him was Rabbi Unterman. So when Rabbi Herzog was the chief rabbi, he, soon after HaKamas HaMedina, the Chazon Ish lived in Eretz Yisrael at that time. So they wanted to import the Zibu. The Zibu tastes like meat. And it doesn't have to drink as much water as a cow does. And Eretz Yisrael climate is very warm, like a camel. A camel doesn't have to drink so much water. A camel has a room inside where it holds all this water, so it doesn't have to drink as much water as a cow. So the zebu has the milah that it gives off milk that tastes almost like the milk of a cow, and it doesn't have to drink so much water. So they wanted to import zebus to Eretz Yisrael, so the Chazon Ish corresponded with Rav Herzog at that time. So he said that the Chochmas Adam, even though the Shach doesn't really say that, the Chochmas Adam quotes the Shach as saying that the meaning of Vilna is that we don't eat any animal unless we have a tradition that it's kosher. We don't rely on Malagir Mafis Pasa. We're afraid we may make a mistake. In fact, they fooled all of the, what do you call, animal experts? What do you call them? Zoologists. They fooled all the zoologists for quite a while. There was some animal in the African jungles that the Torah Tmima quotes this from the books, from the zoology books. They thought that the animal was Malager Mafis Parasa, and it had two spines. And the Gemara has a machlekes, Rabbi Shmuel, whether such an animal can exist or not. So the Rishonim say if it can, so in Shulchan Aruch Machmor, we assume such an animal can exist, and when the Chumash says that it's Osir, Shesua is an animal that's malager, mafis parasa, and it has shnei gabim and shnei shadruas. So we assume that such an animal, there can't be such a min of an animal, it wouldn't be able to live. So the Chumash says that it's also, what is it talking about? So we assume it's talking about a shesua ben pekua. Even though a ben pekua usually is mutter, but if it's a shesua ben pekua, then it's also. It says in Shulchan Aruch. Remember, we were learning that in class, the Rabbi Soloveitchik said, and don't laugh, that the Gemara talks about a Shesua Ben Pekua. He saw it a few times when he went to the slaughterhouse. Remember, Dean Adler also told us. He used to be in zoology. Dean, Dr. Norman Adler. He used to be the dean here years ago. So he said, I think he said he published a book with such a Shesua on the cover of the book. That was the picture on the cover of the book. Something to do with whatever he wrote about there. So Rav Soloveitchik said he didn't go to the slaughterhouse every day. He used to go once a week. And he saw on several occasions, he saw Shesua Ben Pekua. Apparently, it's not so uncommon. So the Torah Tmima quotes this Kasha. Now that we know the zoologists have established, Torah Tmima was written 100 years ago. So he's bothered with the Kasha. Now that the zoologists say that there is such an animal in the African jungles, this Malager, Mafis Parson, Hashnei Gab, Mishnei Shadruas, and it does live. So we should pass on like that opinion that that's what the Chumash is talking about. And that Ben Pekua Shesua should be Mutter. So he has the Kasha on the Shulchan Aruch. So after over 100 years, the zoologists had a conference. around 10, 15 years ago, they came to the realization they made a mistake. That animal is not malagera. It was chewing something, it wasn't chewing its gut. Malagera doesn't mean that the animal is chewing gum. It means that the food gets digested, then it comes back up into the mouth, then the animal chews it again, goes down, then it comes back up, goes, it keeps on going back. Just because the animal is nibbling on something all the time, that's not called malagera. Malagera means the food comes back up. So the zoologists made a mistake for over 100 years. And they just realized 10, 15 years ago that they made a mistake all along. So that's what the Chochmas Adam claims was the minig in Vilna. So the Chazon Ish said, you have to have a masora, that the zibu is kosher, we don't have a masora, and the Litvaks won't be able to eat it. The other Jews will be able to, but the Shach says that in Vilna, this was the minig. So the Litvaks, a lot of the religious Jews in Eretz Yisrael were from Lithuania. So the Chazon Ish said the Litvaks won't be able to eat. So Rabbi Herzog responded back, but we have a tradition. The religious Jews came from India, and they said that they're in India. They always used to shech the zibu, and they used to eat it. So the Chazon Ish responded back, but there were no big Talmidei Chachamim in India. And a minig, a masora, means you have a masora that's approved by Talmidei Chachamim. So Rabbi Herzog was masking. There were no big Talmidei Chachamim in India, and that masora didn't count. So this was assumed to be the case for many years, that they didn't allow the zibu in Eretz Yisrael. They often shecht zibu in Argentina. A lot of times the zibu looks like a cow, but it has a hump like a camel in the middle. It has split hoofs, it has malagera, mafis parsa, has everything, but we had no masora on it. So for many years they didn't allow it in Eretz Yisrael, but then they came to the realization, the goyim were experimenting, so they came to the realization that if you breed together a cow with a zibu, which you're not allowed to do, so the non-Jews did this, so they would breed it together, so I forgot already which way, if it'll be 5/8 one and 3/8 the other, 5/8 a cow and 3/8 a zebu, then it'll have the best of both worlds. The milk will taste just like cow's milk, not like zebu milk, and it won't have to drink so much water. So we have a klal in the Gemara and Pcharis in the first parak that a kosher animal and a non-kosher animal are so different, they can't breed together. They can't have a bloodless together. So if the non-Jewish zoologists or whoever they were breeding these together and they came to this realization, the 5/8 one and 3/8 the other one is the best of both worlds, so obviously there are moilid. So the fact that we have a tradition, we have a masora on the cows are kosher, so the masora carries over to the zebu also. Otherwise, if it wouldn't be kosher, they wouldn't be able to be moilid together. So then about less than 10 years ago, the Rabbanut finally paskin, and I tell you, finally paskin, the zibu is kosher. What happened was they started the tumult. It was on an Erev Shabbos in the middle of the winter, I remember, and they realized that a lot of the people in Bnei Brak had purchased meat from the butcher shops, and they prepared their cholent for Shabbos, and then they realized the butcher shops were selling zibu meat. And it was never approved. It was Geschochten in Argentina, and they were selling it in Bnei Brak. So the Rabbanim Bnei Brak said nobody should eat the cholent till Shabbos, Ashayla, according to the Chazon Ish. In Bnei Brak, they followed the Chazon Ish. So he said, no one's allowed to eat the zibu meat. So then the Rabbanim pointed out, if you're not going to eat the zibu meat, all of your tefillin and mezuzahs are puzzle, because they were using cloth from these animals, from the zibus, for years already, because they came to the realization you can breed them together. So after a month, the whole tumult died down, and now everybody assumes that zibu is kosher. Whenever you have a masora on one animal that it's kosher, it can breed with another animal that you don't have a masora on. The other animal has malagera mafis parsa, so it's considered as if you have a masora on the other animal. Where are we makbid? Where does it say in din that you need a masora? That's by birds. In Chumash, you don't have any simonim. The Chumash just lists off which are the non-kosher birds, and the Gemara says, why does the Chumash list off the non-kosher? Because there are many more kosher birds than non-kosher birds. So if you know what all the non-kosher birds are, if you're an expert, then you have a bird, and you know it's not one of those mentioned in Chumash, so the bird will be kosher. It's not on the non-kosher list, it's kosher. So in the Chumash, it never gives simonim. But the Mishnah in Eilut Treifas, the third parak in Chulin, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Maskonas HaMishnah VaHaGemara. What are the simonim on the bird to determine whether it's a kosher bird or a non-kosher bird? So you can rely on the simonim. So Rashi, the Gemara tells a story there in Eilut Treifas, that on one occasion the Amoraim established that a certain bird was a kosher bird. and they were eating it, and then they came to the realization that they made a mistake. Just like the zoologists made a mistake for over 100 years, they thought that this animal in the African jungle was malagera. They came to the realization it's not so. It was chewing food. It wasn't malagera. It wasn't chewing back the food that came back from the stomach. So the Gemara says they made a mistake. They miscalculated it, and they stopped eating this bird. So Rashi comments on the Gemara. Usually Rashi doesn't make these kind of comments. Rashi says, and since they fell in, they made a mistake. So we should adopt a position. You shouldn't eat any birds based on simonim, because we may make a mistake in establishing its kashrus. You should only eat a bird if you have a masur. So there's a sefer Issa v'Heter Ha'oruch by Rabbeinu Yoina Ashkenazi. That's not the Rabbeinu Yoina who has on brachas the back of us. Not the same Rabbeinu Yoina who wrote the Shari Tshuva. A different Rabbeinu Yoina Ashkenazi who only quotes Rashi and Tosfos. So Rabbeinu Yoina in the sefer Issa v'Heter Ha'oruch quoted on every page in every other page in Yeridei. They always quote the Issa v'Heter. Chelek Aleph Yeridei is all based on the Issa v'Heter. So there are more quotes. Is Mechaber Paskins like the Gemara, he ignores the Rashi. If you have a bird, you have a new bird, and it corresponds to the simonim to determine whether it's a kosher bird. Kosher bird is kosher. And the Rama says that we observe this chumra from Rashi, from the Issa v'Heter, that you only eat a bird if you have a masorah. So that's why there was an issue regarding the turkey. When Columbus discovered America, he came back to Spain, so he brought the turkey with him. So the turkey has all the simonim of a kosher bird, but they never had a masorah on the turkey. So some Rabbanim said that basically the turkey is a hen, it's a chicken, and the masorah that we have on the chicken carries over on the turkey. What do you mean basically it's a hen? All birds are basically the same also. Like misnagdim don't appreciate nigunim, so they say all nigunim are basically the same, just dray a little bit here, dray a little bit there. But there are a million and one nigunim. It's not basically the same. The nigunim are different. The birds are different. They're not basically the same. Sometimes the birds are basically the same, just has an extra finger or something. So that's talking the same. So that's why there was a big issue whether it's permissible to eat turkey. Rabbi David Horowitz just lost his mother. Rabbi Horowitz is a descendant from the Shalom. So the inside of the page in the other day, they quote, the descendants of the Shalom are careful they don't eat turkey, because the Shalom held you shouldn't eat turkey based on this Chumas HaRamah, that there's no Masar. So Rabbi Horowitz says that he has relatives who are not observant. They'll eat Chazer on Yom Kippur, but turkey they won't eat. The descendants from the Shalom, they don't eat turkey. You have to have a Masar. What's the story with fish? So fish, the Pasuk says you have to have snapive kaskeses. The Mishnah says that anything that has kaskeses, scales, is going to have a snapive. There are fish that have snapive that don't have kaskeses. So just if you see a snapper, that's not enough to allow you to eat the fish. But if you see it has kaskeses, even if you don't see any snapper, you have the right to assume it's mutter. Any fish that has kaskeses is going to have snapper also. So that's pretty easy. Determined there is. It says in Shulchan Aruch the kaskeses doesn't have to have any shape or any figure, how big it is, how small it is. The only question is that sometimes the kaskeses is so soft. The whole idea of the Gemara Avodah Zarah sounds like it says the purpose of the kaskeses is to protect the skin of the fish. So sometimes they have this, I think it's called the king clip or something, in South Africa. There's a fish that only swims over there. So they have from Rabbi Kosofsky from almost 100 years ago. Rabbi Kosofsky was a brother-in-law of Rabbi Chaim Moise. He lived in Johannesburg. So they have a tradition. Rabbi Kosofsky is the great-grandfather of Rabbi Eli Shulman, who's a Rebbe here in Yeshiva, the grandfather. Maybe it's his mother, no, his mother's grandfather, I think. So he was a prominent Pesach, so he said that the king clip is kosher. So those who are not happy about it, because the kaskeses is so soft, his mom's just like another layer of skin. So that's an ongoing debate in South Africa. So the Bezin says that it's mut, and there's always some rabbi who's tumbling, and it makes for machlekes. So we know all about the fish. The fish, you don't have to have any masorah. That's a quote. The Darkei Tshuva quotes a tshuva by the Torah's brother, Rabbeinu Huda ben Arash. The fish, there are tens of thousands of minim of fish. It's not shach to say you have to have a masorah. There was discovering new kinds of fish. So a fish, if you have kaskeses, is mutter. Just a machlekes, does it have to have a tzuras hadag? So some rishonim, you look in the smak. There was a machlekes in the days of the Balei HaTos about barbuta. What exactly is the barbuta? What were they fighting about? So they had a whole machlekes. We are mekel on this, but they had a ganza machlekes. Some held that it's only mutter if it looks like a fish. What doesn't look like a fish? So you have the nose of the fish over here, then you have the body around, then you have the tail. So these Rishonim held, the tail has to be indented. If the tail is straight, that doesn't have a Tzuris Hadaksa. They were fighting about this Barbuta. We eat fish. Some of the kosher fish that we eat have a straight tail. So either we assume that it doesn't have to have a Tzuris Hadak, or we assume that it is a Tzuris Hadak. But the question is, let's say you'll have a sea animal that has snapa v'kaskesis. It's not at all a fish. It walks on 2 feet. It has snapa v'kaskesis, hands and feet also. So is that also muta? So I think most of the poskim hold that it's muta, and a minority of the poskim hold that it's also. The snapa v'kaskesis is only muta if it has a tzuris adag. But we don't accept this opinion, that it doesn't have a tzuris adag unless the tail is indented. That we have not accepted. So birds, the minig is that you need a masora. That's the Rashi on the Gemara Neila Treifas. That's, and the Ramo quotes it in Shulchan Aruch. And on and the Shachan Yeridea says that you need a masora to determine whether it's a chai or a behemoth to be allowed to eat the chaylev. And the Chochma Sodom came up with the Chumre. Not only do you need a masora to determine that you're allowed to eat the chaylev because it's a chai as opposed to behemoth, you need a masora to eat an animal. You shouldn't rely on your own. That you establish that it's malagam after its passing, you may make a mistake. And as the zoologists made a mistake for over 100 years, they thought that animal from the African jungles with the double spine, they thought that is malagam. They came to the realization that it isn't. And the bugs, okay, the bugs, we know the story of the bugs. Okay, what else do we have to know?
Microwave
is a bigger problem than inside the oven. The oven is really, our ovens are really taner gadol. Our ovens, even if they're not gigantic, it's called Tanagonal, has a vent in the back, so it doesn't really, let's say if I cook fleshiks in the morning, there isn't going to be thick steam, there isn't going to be any hevel. There's always invisible evaporation, but there isn't any hevel. So it's not going to, the bli is not going to come down and make tray for the food that you're cooking later on. That's the Ramo, that if you cook bizach hazeh fleshiks after milchiks, doesn't ask a b'di'evid for sure. Zachaza means we turn off the fire, went down to room temperature. In the microwave, however, I think there is thick steam. A lot of times, let's say you heat up some soup or something, then you open up the microwave, you can wipe off all the perspiration. There are droplets of water on the walls. It's wet. So obviously there is thick steam there. So in microwave, if someone did fleshiks first or someone did treifas first, and then you're going to put in your food, it's going to be open, it's a very strong likelihood that there's going to be, again, hevel dina kiraitiv, and it'll cause the bliya to come out from the walls and go back into the food that you're doing now. So if you wrap it up in a paper bag, so that solves the whole problem. Usually, on the airlines, they insist that they heat up kosher food, they heat up non-kosher in the same microwave. So the kashrus organizations always insist they should have a double wrapping. They want a double wrapping just as a backup to make sure that in case the outer wrapping is torn, so at least the inner wrapping is there. Strictly speaking, you don't need a double wrapping. It's not halacha, you need two. If you put your food in a paper bag and you close the bag a little bit at the end, the trefa blia is not going to fly through and through. You're going to see. If the trefa blia would fly through and through the paper bag would be sopping wet, which it isn't going to be. It'll be a little bit soft, but it's not going to be sopping wet, so you don't have to worry about that. Or a lot of times people have a microwave, so they'll do fleshiks and milchiks, and they'll cover over the tray with the food, with a special plastic cover that has holes all around the outside. And when the steam is coming out, when the hevel is shooting out from this plastic cover, we know it's only going in one direction. It isn't exposed enough that the bli should be able to come down. See, if you have the lid, by mistake you put the milchik lid on top of the fleshig pot and you're cooking the soup. So there's nothing separating between the lid and the soup on the bottom. So there's going to be thick steam in between the bottom of the lid and the top of the soup. There's going to be hevel dinikarait, a little bling, bring down the milchik blia, go into the fleshig soup on the bottom. But if you have the microwave and you have a cover on top of the food, just have a whole bunch of holes on the outside. So the holes are made in such a way that the steam is only going to go in one direction. It's going to go out. It's not going to go back in. So basically, you have to be careful in a microwave to cover over the kosher food, or the fleshing food, milchik food, and so on. There is a din in the Chumash. We assume...
You don't have to clean it out or anything?
You should clean it out also. Make sure, yeah, sometimes people spill splatter fleshings all over the place. So you should make sure that it's clean. And then after it's clean, then you have to be concerned about the blias, because there's going to be thick steam, and the blias is going to fly down from the walls. The blia will be absorbed in the walls, will fly down and go into the next meichel. So you make sure that you cover over the meichel, the kosher meichel, when you heat it up.
So if it's clean and you cover it, it's clean and it's in a bag, like Rabbi said.
Then there's no problem. Then there's no problem. Yeah. There is a din of tefillas kelim. There is a mitzvah. We assume that it's a mitzvah and a Torah to perform tefillas kelim on metal kelim, on clay mateches. If it's glass, so we assume, most of the poskim assume that tefillas kelim is only made rabbanon on glasses, and on metal tefillas kelim is a mitzvah and a Torah. The Gemara says it doesn't apply to watches, and it doesn't apply to trousers, and it doesn't apply. A person wears a suit of armor, it's a clay mateches. Only applies to clay suda. Only applies to pots and pans, forks and knives, and plates and so on. China dishes, kli cheres don't need tefillah in a mikveh. If it's mitzupah b'schuches, if it's ours are glazed, all of our China dishes are glazed. So the Shach quotes from the Issa the Heter that if you have a China dish, kli cheres, that's mitzupah b'schuches, you should require tefillas kelim midirabbanon, because of the schuches. You should require midirabbanon. Many Gdolim had the practice not to follow this Issa the Heter. Moshe Feinstein, his Chuvis, doesn't even mention that the Shach says otherwise. He says he's not toivel his China dishes. Rav Soloveitchik also assumed that he wasn't toivel. They printed Hanhagas of Rabbi Gifter also. Many of the Talmid HaChachamim of the last generation were not machmer for that, to be toivel China dishes. Here in Broyers, they are makbid on that. You table the China dishes that are glazed without a bracha. What about plastic? So most of the poskim hold that plastic doesn't need tefillah scale. It's a new material on the Chachamim. Maybe if the Tanoim would have lived in our generation, maybe they would have made a takana. You should be table plastic also. But the Tanoim didn't live now. They didn't make such a takana. Showing you not mechuyev. What do you have to be toivel? So you have to be toivel the lid also. So the Shulchan Aruch distinguishes. If it's a lid of a soup pot, and the soup gets heated up and it evaporates, and the lid prevents it from disappearing. The lid, the steam bounces on the bottom of the lid and it falls back into the bottom. So the lid is also holding the food down. So you have to be toivel the lid on a pot that you cook food in that prevents the hevel from disappearing. But if you have a candy dish, and the lid is just to hold the dust from falling down, or the lid is to prevent the children from grabbing all the candy. But the lid doesn't really hold the food. You only need tefillas kelim on a kli that holds the food. If it doesn't contain the food, you don't need tefillas kelim. In Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber quotes that the sakan shel shechita is so far in advance of the eating, of the final product, you shech the animal, and then you have to salt it, then you have to cut it up in little pieces, then you have to cook it. It's way, way in advance of the final product of eating it. So that's a machlokes in Rishonim, so you table that b'li bracha. Or let's say when you make matzahs, so you don't want the matzah to rise, so you have a thing that makes holes. You have a thing that's round and it makes holes by poking sharp points into the matzah. So the Shach says that's also so far in advance. You're dealing with the raw dough so far in advance, so that's a machleika, so you should be tabled that b'li bracha. But normally you have to be tabled with a bracha. If the thing still belongs to a non-Jew, the whole din of tefillas kelim in the Issa the Heter by the Rabbi Yoni, he says that tefillas kelim is like an act of geirus, like you megayer the kelim, just like you have to convert a non-Jewish person before you marry him, so you have to convert the kelim. It's a maisit, a geirus on the kelim. The Shemesh Shmuel was the son of Davdi Nezer. So Shemesh Shmuel is a drushes, chassidish drushes on the Parshas HaShavua, on the Yom HaTov. So he quotes a very novel idea in the name of his father, that when a ger converts, when a non-Jew converts, does he have to be toivel his kelim? Because he used to belong to a non-Jew, him, and now belongs to a Jew, him. He didn't buy it from anybody. So he quotes that his father said that once the ger is toivel in the mikveh, so his tefillah is all of his kelim. How does that work? So he quotes the Mishnah in the end of Beitzah. The Mishnah in Beitzah has nothing to do with this. Mishnah says that if I have a tchum yantif, Mishnah in Beitzah talking about yantif, whatever my tchum is, abeim of hakelim kiragle habailim. Let's say I'm in Eretz Yisrael and I gave the keys to next door neighbor, and they have the right to use whatever they want from my apartment. So all of the things in my apartment are considered chutz l'tchum. So the neighbor is not allowed to take it outside of the house. The whole house is Kedavar Amizdami. If there's an Erev, so the whole within the Erev is Kedavar Amizdami. But they're not allowed to take it outside of the house or outside of the Erev, because it's already chutz l'tchum of the owner. Abeim of Akelim that belong to someone is Keragel Abaylam, has the same tchum as the person. That's the context of the Mishnah. So the Shem Mishmo quotes that his father said, once the ger converts, Abeim v'hakelim Keragel Abaylam, so the tvila and the Baylam is oila and the kelim. It's a very strange, novel idea. So Rav, one of the Dayanim in London, used to be Dayan Grosnas, he learned by the Chafetz Chaim. He was a Levi, he used to pour the water on the Chafetz Chaim's hands. That's what he was known for. He was very friendly with the Rabbein, with Rabbi Gerelik and the others, all those, Dr. Belkin, they learned in Radna at the same time. So Dayan Grosnas has a chul about this in his Sefer Leivarie. He thinks that this Avnei Nezer is a very novel idea. He thinks out of respect for the Avnei Nezer, we should mistama tell a ger, we should be toivel b'li bracha. But to tell him it doesn't have to be toivel b'kelem, that's too much of a chiddush. That's a very big chiddush. Tvilas kelem, you have to be careful not to have any chatzitzes. So sometimes you buy something and it has a sticker on it. So you're not going to use it with the sticker. You're going to want to remove the sticker. Sometimes even after you remove the sticker, it has a lot of glue. So you got to remove the glue also. You don't want to use it with the glue. But sometimes the kli is such that it has the sticker on the bottom. And it's nothing embarrassing. The balabasta will use it with the sticker on the bottom because it says that it's expensive stuff. So it's a maila. She wants to leave it on. So it's a miyot she'ena makbid. So if you have a chatzitza that's a miyot she'ena makbid, then it's not even a chatzitza midrabanan.
But if it was just a price tag? But if it was a price tag, not a...
Nah, that they usually always a makbid to take off. Off. Yeah. Only if it's a miyot she'ena makbid, then you don't have to take it off. And now there's an issue. It's very rare that the keli belong to a non-Jew. It's very rare. The keli probably never belonged to a non-Jew. It probably belonged to a corporation, non-Jewish corporation. So that was a big machlokes. According to the international law, according to the Din HaMachus of the international law, when you have shares in a corporation, you own the corporation, but the corporation owns the kelim. So the corporation is not a human being. It's not a Jew. It's not a non-Jew. So the kelim never belonged to a non-Jew. So that was a big machlokes in the last 100 years. Does the halacha recognize this institution of corporation? The halacha does recognize what we call a chaloshem b'alim. It's not a person owns something. Let's say tzedakah owns it. The Beis HaMikdash owns something. Beis HaMikdash is not a person. It doesn't mean the Rosh Hashanah owns it. There's a chaloshem b'alim. There is. The halacha does recognize that. But does the halacha recognize this shtickl, that the corporation, all the countries of the world came up with this Seinfeld, and they recognize this Seinfeld that the corporation owns it, I own the corporation, owns the kelim. So that's a big chance. Moshe Feinstein doesn't accept it. There was a big machlekes 100 years ago, different gedolim in Europe. So that's really a question. All the kelim that we buy from a non-Jewish store, the store doesn't belong to the person. Everybody's incorporated now. They don't want to be held responsible. If someone sues them, so they want to be personally liable. So everything is owned by the corporation. So if the store is a goyish store that's incorporated, and the company who distributed the kelim, and the company who manufactured the kelim, they're all corporations. Everything is corporations. So it's a shaila, really, whether you say broch on the tefillah skin. It's a shaila, maybe you don't even need tefillah skin. Maybe the kli never belonged to a non-Jew. It belonged to a corporation, but it didn't belong to a non-Jew. That's a shaila.
So there are some people who are knowing, I think,
that's a good idea. If the keli still belongs to a non-Jew, then for sure the din is that you don't need the... Don't say a bracha. Okay. If the keli still belongs to a non-Jew, then for sure you don't need tefillah skin. Sometimes you have a kli that it's simply impossible to be toivel. So what do you do? So the poskim say, give a shutvus to a non-Jew. Make a shutvus for the non-Jew. So if it belongs to a non-Jew, it's not shaykh to do any tefillah skin. Okay, I apologize that yesterday someone died in the family, had to attend the funeral. And this was tashlumin for yesterday and the day before. Well, what are we supposed to do next? What's on schedule for
today
Sunday?
Today was tefillin.
What's Sunday supposed to be?
Birchas
HaMazon. Okay, so what should we do? Tefillin or Birchas HaMazon? What do you say?
You did tell him last year.
You did tell him last year, so we'll do Birchas HaMazon. Okay. Sunday.